Luke. Luke.
Ben?
You will listen to the Wampa's Lair podcast.
Podcast?
There you will hear your hosts, Carl LeClaire and Jason Hunt, as they discuss all things Star Wars. So join the conversation and hang out. Oh, and watch out for Wampas.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to another exciting episode of the Wampa's Lair podcast. This is episode number 190. Boring conversation anyway, because I'm sure we've had a couple of those over the years. Just kidding. I am, as always, one of your hosts, Jason Hunt, and with me, the Ponda Baba to my Dr. Evazan, we have Carl LeClaire.
Oh, Jason, classic A New Hope right there. That's a nice little combo for us. Because we're talking top five A New Hope moments today, I'm excited. This is hopefully not going to be a boring conversation. We're just trying to be silly.
Yeah, that is true.
Jason, I've watched A New Hope twice in two nights. So I watched it last night and the night before. I don't know why. I never watch A New Hope. It's probably the least watch next to Attack of the Clones of Star Wars movies for me. And I loved watching it two nights ago. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to watch it again tonight. That's what I said to myself last night. And I enjoyed it even more.
There you go. You go through these cycles with these movies. You're just like, you know, for a while, this one's on your playlist. And then it's that one. And then it's, you know, neither of them. And you're like, I don't know which one I want to watch. And then the one that's at the bottom in your list goes, hey, look at me. And you go, okay.
Yeah. Because it's like, yeah, I've watched Empire probably 100 times already this year, so why don't we slip in some A New Hope love?
Might as well.
I'm so excited. I think a part of it is just, I finished listening to the radio drama again last week, which is so good.
The A New Hope radio drama is really
good. I think it's the best, yeah. I think they go downhill from there. Not that any of them are bad. I love them all. But I think A New Hope's the strongest, then Empire and Jedi's is the weakest.
It is.
But it was so good. And also, let's be real, in just 2 days, we're getting a 3-minute new Rogue One trailer, which is obviously all about the build-up to A New Hope. I can't wait. We're going to be podcasting about that next week. We're very excited about it. Unfortunately, I'm out of town all weekend, so Jason and I have to be a few days late on that little boat. But
we will be more than just reacting. We will have analyzed and taken it all in, and we will be
ready to talk about it really well.
Yes, yes.
We'll probably be like
eloquent.
We'll be
about
like
it.
The sixth best analysis out there on Star Wars podcasts. And the reason I say sixth is because I like to be humble. So
right.
And let's be real. Star Wars Report will probably do a really good job.
Yes, live from Celebration Europe, you know.
Oh, that's right. I wonder.
Riley's over there,
that's
and
right.
Bethany's finishing up some sort of European study abroad thing, and she's going to make it over there too. And gosh,
they're lucky.
I'm jealous.
I know.
I want to go to Europe.
Well, let's go to Orlando.
Okay, we can do that.
All right, let's do it. Jason, before we jump into all things A New Hope, though, we had a poll given to us by Jackson Alonzo, who's one of our Larians, about who would you like to date in the Star Wars galaxy. And we got a lot of good responses, so I'll hand that over to you for the results.
We did. There's also a bunch of random ones in here, too, that I think some of them were put in for kicks and giggles, but we'll get into that. With one vote each, we have quite a few. Mara Jade, Maz Kanata got a vote. Torin Farr, who is one of the rebel officers from Echo Base. Ahsoka Tano, FN2199 or Traitor. Jocasta Nu, although if her number is not in your phone, it does not exist. Cy Snoodles, I don't know why, and then Jessica Pava, who is the female resistance pilot for the Force Awakens.
She's also in Game of Thrones.
Mm. Oh.
Yeah.
I did not know that. Yeah. I don't watch Game of Thrones, so that's why I didn't know. And then with two votes each, we have Leia and Poe Dameron, because he's a very attractive man. Padme came in with 4 votes, and then Rey took it so far with 6, including mine. But Carl, you have said all of a sudden that you're going to throw a wrench in everything.
Yep.
And not go with Rey. Who are you going to say you'd rather date?
Well, I have the best girlfriend in the entire galaxy, so it's kind of a moot point. But I'm going to go with Ben Solo.
Ben Solo.
I'm giving Ben. He needs the love. That Ben kid needs some love. So I'm giving mine to Ben Solo, because with me at his side, he'd never become Kylo.
There you go.
And Adam Driver gets crapped on too much for being ugly. He's not ugly. Like, he's not like your stereotypical pretty boy, but he's a handsome dude. And I think he needs some love. So I'm giving mine to Ben Solo.
He's not what you would call traditionally handsome, with the perfectly symmetrical features that are cut out of a cookie cutter box, you know, that everyone in Hollywood seems to get plastic surgery to look like.
Except I'm Oscar kind of, Isaac, because he's perfect.
Well, right. I mean, Oscar Isaac's a whole, he's out of anybody else's league. but Adam Driver is, he's good looking in his own way. Leave him alone, folks.
Yeah.
Russell, I mean, I have to say that if I want to have any shot at being good looking anyway, so.
No. Yeah, no, I'm not surprised Ray took the cake.
Yeah. But she's kind of all around awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, and that accent.
Hello, Mr. Abrams.
Oh, man. All right.
Well,
we've got a matchup for you at the end of this show. So stick around. We're going to hit back to our matchups next. But we have a topic to get to before we get there, don't we?
Yeah. We're going to talk A New Hope.
Okay.
Jason, I have 2 honorable mentions as always.
Well, I had one when we got on here, but since you mentioned you had 2, I came up with a 2nd.
So. All right. Well, do you want me to kick the shebang off?
You kick the shebang off this
All right.
time.
I'll kick the shebang off. My first honorable mention is the I call it the Falcon versus the TIE Fighters. So it's that escape battle from the Death Star when the Millennium Falcon is going up against, I think it's 4 TIE Fighters. Yes, because Han and Luke each get 2. I mean, I think it was my friend Greg who commented on this on the wall, the Facebook wall. You know, the music is so good in this part of the film. I think it's some of the best action music in all of Star Wars. So for that alone, it's got to be on the list. And it's really cool getting to see the Falcon in the heat of action. It's the only real like dogfighting action the Falcon has, except for Return of the Jedi. But it's the only dogfighting Han does in the Falcon. Mm-hmm. You know, the dogfighting in Return of the Jedi, it's just 2 random guys in the gun turrets. We don't even know who they are.
Right.
They're in deleted scenes, but they're not in the actual film. So I just think, you know, it's such a fun sequence. You get to see kind of Han and Luke work together. To me, they're kind of a dynamic duo. Han is the Batman to Luke's Robin, you know, at this point
in
the game.
That is very true.
You know, Luke is still new to it, but again, it shows Luke's prowess. It shows that Luke is able to hop into a new machine and quickly figure it out and be effective, whereas Han is clearly effective at what he does. I still wish Han had gotten 3 and Luke had only gotten 1, but that's just because I love Han and it's his ship. But yeah, I mean, it's just such a fun sequence, so it's got to be on my list. It's the most action-packed, second most action-packed sequence featuring the Falcon besides the asteroid field.
I will save thoughts on that for later.
I thought you might. What's your first honorable mention?
All right. My first honorable mention is going to be one of the most iconic moments from A New Hope, period. And people will be like, well, why is it higher on your favorites list? It's iconic. That doesn't necessarily mean it's my favorite. But that's going to be the binary sunset. Just everything from the imagery to the music. It's just gorgeous. It's amazing, and if I were, you know, taking favorite like stills from the movie, that would definitely be high on my list. But this is something that in the story, it's more like he's wanting adventure. He's pining away for adventure. But then that all happens after this moment. And that's what I like more about the movie is, you know, when he actually gets on the adventure than going, oh, man, I wish I could go on an adventure. You know, that being said, it's iconic. It's gorgeous. And the music is amazing. So I have to put it as an honorable mention.
You know, it's actually not on my list. And the only reason it's not is because this is, again, one of those points we've kind of beaten like a dead tauntaun. Right. You know, it's a scene that we've hit on in so many different ways. It definitely belongs in my list. It's, of course, one of my favorite moments in A New Hope. But it's not even quite a moment. It's just a brief scene. So that's kind of why I pushed it out, because I didn't really want to talk about it again. But yeah, for all the reasons you said and more, I love that scene. Because, again, it's the beauty of George Lucas's visual storytelling, right? Like, to me, this scene and obviously the scene of Anakin and Padme in Revenge of the Sith are the two most standalone scenes that George Lucas can capture so much and say so much without saying anything at all, except for thank you, John Williams, for breathing the oxygen, if you will, into that moment. So yeah, I mean, this is a great scene. It is. It encapsulates that feeling of Luke's for something more. And dreaming for something bigger. So, yeah, great scene, but again, not on my list, just purely for the sake of I've talked about it at least a few times.
At least a few.
Right.
So what's your second honorable mention?
My second honorable mention is actually something I completely forgot about until I rewatched this movie just a couple times ago. And the reason it's on my list has more to do with the fact that I feel like it does a great job of tying in the prequels. So I'm going to play a little clip here real quick.
Okay.
Until this battle station is fully operational, we are vulnerable. The Rebel Alliance is too well equipped. They're more dangerous than you realize.
Dangerous to your Starfleet, Commander, not to this battle station.
The Rebellion will continue to gain a support in the Imperial Senate.
The Imperial Senate will no longer be of any concern to us. I have just received word that the Emperor has dissolved the Council permanently. The last remnants of the Old Republic have been swept away.
Impossible. How will the Emperor maintain control without the bureaucracy?
The regional governors now have direct control over their territories. Fear will keep the local systems in line. Fear of this battle station.
And what are the...
So, I won't play the rest, but... Or should I play the rest?
That's all right. You don't have to play it.
But obviously...
I'm having fun miming it all back here.
Jason's miming it all for us back here in the background. But yeah, no, it's, I call it the Imperial Conference. And I always like those in-between scenes in Empire where it's focused on, I mean, usually it's predominantly just Vader, but I love like seeing what the bad guys are up to. You know, if you have a good bad guy, it makes for a compelling movie. And this is one of those scenes, and it's my favorite scene of, again, one of those like interspersed scenes of what the Empire is up to. And I think it's so great because we're getting a sense of history here. This is now, you know, 20 years after the events of Revenge of the Sith, and finally the Old Republic has been swept away. I mean, you know, the Senate was in place all the way up through now. Granted, I mean, I'm sure it was a very one-sided Senate. Palpatine obviously had very, very direct control of it. But any sense of democracy is now gone. But it's just interesting that it took that long, that Palpatine, you know, at least gave that farce of democracy for as long as he did. So I think that's really neat, getting that backstory. And we know what that kind of looks like. We know where that Senate building is. We know what's going on. I just really like that. It's so well informed by the prequels. And then we obviously go into this discussion about, you know, some of the officers fear about the rebels having these plans. Tarkin doesn't seem to care at all. He is, that's the scary thing about him. He is just so calm and collected. He's very different, right? Like it's a very different, you know, it's very clear that General Hux is the Grand Moff Tarkin of Force Awakens. But they are two very different characters. You know, one is very unhinged and very, you know,
fanatical.
Fanatical, yeah. Whereas Tarkin is just so calm and collected, and to me, that's almost more scary. And he just doesn't seem to care. And again, this is kind of what I mentioned this on our last episode, but the reason I hate Tarkin so much is because he's a bully. You know, fear will keep the local systems in line. Fear of this battle station. You know, like, that's kind of how he plans to rule. Is he's all about the use of fear. But again, those officers then voice their fear of the rebels, you know, finding a way to exploit those plans. You know, like, however unlikely, you know, it's probably not going to happen, but it's out there that it could happen. And, you know, Vader just seems to say, like, don't worry about it, I'm on this. And then, of course, we get to see Vader show off the power of the Force.
Right.
By force choking Mahdi. You know, Mahdi is your typical...
Mahdi is the total kiss butt. I'm not going to... Yeah, he's about the Death Star. You know, Tarkin is not concerned about the rebel plan, the rebels having the plans. At least he's not giving off the air of concern at all. You know, fear will keep the local systems aligned, fear of this battle station, that sort of thing. And Mahdi's like, yeah, because we have the best thing in the world. It's better than anything, better than your stupid Force Vader. You know, Mahdi's an idiot. But he believes implicitly in this Death Star and is very happy to be in as high a position with the running of this Death Star as he is, as you can tell.
Again, something worth mentioning, I think, from the radio dramas is Mahdi on two occasions tries to convince Tarkin to basically take over the Empire, because he says to him, "You've got the most powerful instrument of war. It's your command. The Emperor's a long ways away, you know.
Yeah.
And don't even worry about Vader." But yeah, no, I mean, this is a great scene where Vader just shows up, and you know, Mahdi is probably your typical, you know, Imperial officer or person in the galaxy at this time. Again, the Jedi have been extinct for, you know, about 20 years now. The Force is not something of normal conversation. It's not something probably a lot of people even believe in anymore. So Mahdi's, you know, again, he's that voice of, like, well, technology, right? Like, George Lucas, this is always a big theme for him, technology versus something beyond.
Humanity.
Or humanity, you know? Yeah. So, and, you know, he's talking about, you know, all this power he has because of this machine, and Vader says, well, it's nothing compared to the Force, and he mocks him, so Vader shows what he thinks of for his lack of faith. And again, it's just such an iconic scene, too, you know, just seeing Vader raise two fingers, and he's just force-choking this guy again, and that really cool sound of the Force, like that vibration
the
sound.
Rumble.
Yeah, great job, Ben Burt. But you know, like, if that wasn't there, it'd almost be kind of weird, but that rumble is what makes it all the more powerful and all the more terrifying. So that was originally my number five, but I forgot about a moment, so I got bumped up to my favorite honorable mention. So
there you go. It's a good scene. It's a good thing. Good scene. And I'd considered parts of that scene for my list, but it didn't end up making it. I do like it.
Well,
as you could probably tell when you were playing the audio clip, Carl.
I could.
All right. Well, my favorite honorable mention is going to be the cantina. And not necessarily, you know, the whole cantina sequence, but just sort of the idea of the cantina. And I guess primarily, if you're going to pick a moment, primarily, you know, when they enter and we're panning across and we're getting a look in and all these different aliens and, you know, that sort of thing. And I... listening to the music and that sort of thing. And I just love the environment of the cantina, because it really, it's the first part of Star Wars that really gives us an idea of just how big the universe is and how crazy it can be. And, you know, I've said, you know, the prequels focus more on world building than the original trilogy, but this is sort of that world building that, you know, A New Hope really establishes, is that there are all these different alien species and they all interact together and they all come to the same place and that sort of thing. Listen to music, drink, you know, have conversation. And while I do like, you know, the scenes there with, you know, Obi-Wan and Han and Luke discussing the Falcon and who's going to fly it, and, you know, 2000 now plus 15, we reach Alderaan. You know, that all that fun stuff is great, but I think I don't think I would like that scene as much if it had been anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
That whole setting really elevates those scenes for me. And so I'm just going to put the cantina out there as my second honorable mention here.
I'm going to reserve comment.
Okay. Number five.
Again, probably the most iconic thing about Star Wars, the opening battle of A New Hope. And to me, that's pretty much, you know, everything from, you know, right after the opening crawl up through, you know, 3PO and R2 taken off in an escape pod. And, you know, again, this is just having not grown up in 1977, I don't understand fully what that meant for people, especially kids at that time. I mean, it was a totally different movie from anything else. But just, you know, that opening shot of, you know, this massive Star Destroyer chasing down this very small Rebel frigate, you know, and just right from the get-go, it shows how much the rebellion is overmatched. You know, this empire is scary, and it's big, and it's powerful. And you get that right off the bat. You know, I always love those shots of these, you know, just the random soldiers that are, you know, taking up arms in the hallway of Tana 4. I know some people call it Tantive 4, but I call it Tana 4.
Mm-hmm. Same here.
Silent E, you know.
Yes.
We don't call it the... The sorry. anyway,
unless you're in England,
good point. But you know, you see these rebel soldiers, and there's just this look about them of fear and like, oh crap. But there's right. also a look of determination, which I think is equally important. You know, mm-hmm. is they're determined to try to stop this onslaught, but they last like a few seconds. And, you know, as much crap as the stormtroopers get for being inaccurate, they're not inaccurate here. I mean, they push back. And this is a bottleneck situation, you know, in a military standpoint. This should be an easy, you know, defense for these rebel soldiers. You know, all they got to do is keep these stormtroopers pinned down, and they can't. They're just overwhelmed by, yeah, sure, sheer numbers, but also it seems like these stormtroopers are pretty accurate. There's soldiers dropping like flies, you know, for the rebels here. So I think, you know, again, that this is an important opening because it shows that these stormtroopers are something to be feared. You know, yeah, they can't hit our heroes, but that's true of any movie.
Right.
You know, so that can't be an indictment on all stormtroopers.
Because
we see how deadly they are here. And it's quite possible that it's the 501st because they're with Vader. So that's, you know, that's not a, you know, dim-witted company.
Nope.
And the only other thing I want to really mention from the opening battle is that moment, and it's one of my favorite Darth Vader moments, is of him choking and killing Captain Antilles. Because again, it just shows that Vader is somebody to be feared. Again, we first see him walk in, you know, you got that music, and there's no, you know, obviously nothing's being said. Nothing needs to be said. It's clear that he's the big bad villain. And then the very next scene we see him in, he's got a guy with one hand by the throat off the ground, crushes his throat and just tosses him like a rag doll. And, you know, when he shouts, bring me the, you know, passengers, I want them alive. You're like, oh crap, why does he want them alive? And it's like, well, obviously he's going to not be pleasant to them.
Exactly.
You know, so it's right off the bat. Vader is somebody you should be afraid of. Again, that's not to go on a side tangent, but that's always been one of my disappointments with Phantom Menace. Is I really wish we saw some Darth Maul do something freakish kind of early on, just so that, you know, yeah, we know to fear him. He's the bad guy. He looks scary, but he doesn't do anything scary. That just how much more cool would it have been if we saw him like slaughter some Tusken Raiders or, you know, Jawas or Kitster.
Oh, my God.
And Wald. Not them. But, well, although that would be important, it shows he's not afraid to kill kids. That's terrifying.
Oh, God.
And that would be, and that would be a foreshadowing for something Anakin did. Oh, snap.
But you really want to kill Kitster and Wald in The Phantom Menace?
Why not? That's
how innocent that movie is?
Good point. All right, fair enough. But anyway, yeah, so that's the opening battle is my number five.
All right. Well, I love this opening sequence. There's a specific moment during this opening sequence that I will be talking about later, so I'll just talk about it in generalities. The opening shot, I've always liked starship to starship combat, and I wish we had more of that in Star Wars. And so when we get to see the Star Destroyer and the Rebel Blockade Runner chasing, you know, racing across the skies and firing back and forth at each other, I've always liked those shots, similar to some of the shots we get to see of the Rebel ships and the Star Destroyers over the Death Star in Return of the Jedi. You know, the whole broadside idea. And we see a little bit of that in Revenge of the Sith, too. But we don't get a lot of that in Star Wars so far. But I really like this sequence, the opening shots in particular. I've always... The whole sequence just sets up the movie so well. It gives you, throws you right into the action without really expecting you to know all the background, because that'll be explained as we go. And, of course, there's R2 and 3PO mixed in all throughout this, which always elevates it in my book. So I won't say anything more now because I don't want to step on the toes of one of my moments later. But, yeah, it's a great sequence.
Well, what's your number five?
My number five is going to be the TIE fighter chase, chasing the Falcon as they escape the Death Star. It's a great scene. You talked about it earlier. It's just fun. It's just fun. And the music is some of my favorite music from the movie, is in that sequence. But we really get to finally see what the Falcon can do. Han's been boasting about the Falcon and all this stuff throughout the whole movie. He outran some Star Destroyers, but you'd figure a freighter with a souped up hyperdrive engine could do that anyways. So it was just nice to see what the Falcon can really do in that sort of situation. And it also lets us see everybody actually working together. All of our heroes actually working together and relying on each other, and not bickering as much as they did when they were escaping the Death Star. So I like that sequence a lot.
Well, it's a good one. I won't disagree with you there.
What's your number four?
My number four also gets another quick little clip, so here we go.
Okay.
Thank the Maker. This oil bath is going to feel so good. I've got such a bad case of dust contamination, I can barely move.
It just isn't fair. Oh, Biggs is right. I'm never going to get out of here.
Is there anything I might do to help?
Oh, not unless you can alter time, speed up the harvest, or teleport me off this rock.
I don't think so, sir. I'm only a droid and not very knowledgeable about such things. Not on this planet, anyway. As a matter of fact, I'm not even sure which planet I'm on.
Well, if there's a bright center to the universe, you're on the planet that it's farthest from.
I see, sir.
Oh, you can call me Luke.
I see, Sir Luke.
No, just Luke.
Oh. And I am C-3PO, human-cyborg relations. And this is my counterpart, R2-D2.
Hello. You're a lot of carbon scoring here. Looks like you boys have seen a lot of action.
With all we've been through, sometimes I'm amazed we're in as good condition as we are. What with the rebellion and all.
You know of the rebellion against the Empire?
That's how we came to be in your service, if you take my meaning, sir.
Have you been in many battles?
Several, I think. Actually, there's not much to tell. I'm not much more than an interpreter, and not very good at telling stories. Well, not at making them interesting, anyway.
Oh, well, my little friend. Got something jammed in here real good. Were you on a Star Cruiser?
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
What's this?
What is what? He asked you a question. What is that?
Okay, so, yeah, that could go for a little bit longer, but I'm done. I love this scene where Luke is kind of just complaining, and he gets the call to adventure. I know a lot of people are probably like, you've got this on there, and there's going to be a couple things I don't have on that people are probably going to be like, you had this on there, but not that. maybe that one guy will tell me I'm doing it wrong again. I don't know. Yeah, I love dialogue scenes in Star Wars for the most part. I feel like they're important scenes, and this is a very excuse me. This is a very important scene in this movie because it's obviously attached to that, you know, iconic scene you mentioned earlier, Jason. Mm-hmm. This is Luke making it very clear how unsatisfied he is. You know, he's whining. He's, you know, your typical young person who's just kind of fed up with being stuck on the farm, you know, literally right. for him. And he just wants something more out of life. And it's funny that he obviously doesn't have a lot of people to talk to because he's just complaining to these two droids, these non-humans that non-people, you know, that about his plight right now. And, you know, he just wants out. And he just jumps on it when 3PO makes it clear that, like, they know about the rebellion versus the Empire. And he gets so excited, like, he wants some good stories. And 3PO tells him he's not a good storyteller, but that's not true. We saw Return of the Jedi. to me, it's one of the funniest lines, too, when he says, he's like, I see, sir. He goes, oh, just Luke. I see, Sir Luke. I love how he calls him Sir Luke. I always get a chuckle out of that. But yeah, you know, and then obviously that call to adventure. He stumbles upon this hidden message from Princess Leia. This is his Moses in the burning bush moment. He gets that call to adventure. He sees something beautiful and mesmerizing, and it makes him want to know more. And what's interesting too is Luke's response is like, you know, sounds like she's in trouble. We better play back the message. His gut reaction, his gut impulse is to help, even though he probably can't in any way. His response to wanting to help just shows us he's a good person, that he has something to offer. I really like that scene because it shows so much of who Luke is in this movie. He is somebody who wants more. He's going to jump on any chance he can to get it. And at the heart of his desire for something more is that he's a good person. It's not just some selfish act. Like Luke is just like, oh, I want to, you know, have fun and adventure, and it's just all about me having fun and adventure. Like, no, he actually wants to do something to help. He wants to make a difference. And he knows that he can make a difference, but he's not able to here on Tatooine. So I really like this scene for that reason.
Yeah, no, it's a good scene. It's not on my list, but it's a key scene. It's a very key scene in Luke's journey, as we can all tell, because this is what gives him the reason to even consider, you know, going off in search of Obi-Wan, going off to save the princess. You know, it's sort of a cliched reason for going off on an adventure, but it works. You know, she's a princess, she needs help, and the hero stumbles across the message on its way to somebody else, and he decides he wants to get involved. And it is so key to Luke's story that you can't help but like it in some respect, but it's just not high enough on my list to make it on my list this time around. So we'll see if after I rewatch the movie a couple times if that changes or not. But.
Well, what's your number four then?
My number four is I've labeled it Story Time with Obi-Wan. And this is, of course, you know, the scene in Ben's hovel where we get all of this background information on Luke's father and even the Force as well. You know, everything from, you know, no, my father didn't fight in the Clone Wars. He's a navigator and a spice fader. It's what your uncle told you. You know, that sort of thing. And he was the best star pilot in the galaxy and a cunning warrior. To, you know, even his veiled description of what ultimately happened to Anakin, you know, which makes so much more sense now that we've seen the prequels. You know, Obi-Wan didn't lie. He just didn't tell the whole truth from a certain point of view. Because, you know, you don't start off some kid's adventure by saying, yeah, your father's the bad guy.
hey, you know that father that you are obsessed with knowing more about? Well, let me tell you something about that guy.
He was a good man. He's not anymore. He's a horrible human being, if he's human anymore. You know,
he's more machine now than man.
Twisted and evil. So, you want to come save the princess? and then, of course, you know, we get his whole, you know, not dissertation on the Force in the sense of what Yoda does, but introduction to the Force. You know, Force is what gives a Jedi its power. It's an energy field created by all living things. It penetrates us, surrounds us, and binds the galaxy together. I think I reversed those, but that's okay. But I like this scene. I like this scene. It's, you know, and of course, in that whole scene, he gets his lightsaber. The weapon gets passed down. And in light of The Force Awakens, that has more significance now. You know, the fact that this lightsaber keeps getting passed from hero to hero now garners more and more significance in light of what we saw in The Force Awakens. The fact that it called out to Rey makes you wonder how much of a connection it really there what really was with Luke when he got it. Mm. Obviously, there wasn't any vision or anything, but I'm sure it was sort of a feeling of rightness in all of that. So, in retrospect from The Force Awakens, that scene has a little bit more weight now.
Yep.
It's part of why it made it here on my list.
Yeah, I love this scene, and I'm honestly surprised it's not on my list, because it'd be very close to being on there. This is one of my favorite special edition shots, actually, too, is right before that scene, is just getting the little shot of Ben Tovel and the land speeder parked there. And you see that the land speeder is like almost as big as the hovel, which to me is just important because it just shows how small this thing is. Like, Ben Kenobi has a studio apartment. That's it, in the middle of the desert. You know,
pretty much.
Rent's probably pretty low. It is. It's such a great scene because it is where we get a lot of story building. And exactly like you said, you know, this is where Luke at least gets some sense of who his father was. You know, Ben obviously chooses to tell him a certain point of view because Luke's not ready for the full truth. You know, it just, there'd be no point in that right now. Instead, he's just telling him that you come from greatness. You know, your father was a great Jedi Knight. He was a great pilot. So, you know, that probably gives Luke a stronger sense of his own identity than just, oh, my father was a navigator on a spice freighter. Like, there's not much to him. You know, and, you know, interesting that, he was a navigator on a spice freighter, though, because spice is illegal. So, and it seems like Owen, whenever Luke brings up his father, Owen doesn't want to have that conversation. I think it's interesting that he made up a lie, though, that at least he was in some way involved with nefarious affairs. You know, if he was working for spice smugglers, he's probably not a good person. You know, so, you know, Owen has created a lie about Anakin that still puts Anakin in a bad light, if you will.
Yeah, to try and dissuade Luke from asking more questions.
Exactly. Yeah, he was a common criminal, Luke. Don't worry about it. That is an iconic moment as well, when Obi-Wan explains to us for the first time what the Force is. He kind of doesn't say much, and there's nothing prolific about what he says. It's essentially, he's just saying there's something more, and you can learn that too. You know, because even in that, you know, he gives Luke Excalibur. He gives him a means through which that he can now come with Ben and become something great. You know, I really like this too, because this is where Luke really gets the real call, right? Like, so in that scene I just talked about, Luke gets the call to adventure, you know, but it's not verbalized to him yet. To me, it's almost like, you know, Rey kind of has a couple calls to adventure. You know, the first call to adventure is just finding BB-8 and rescuing him from Tito, and then getting an invitation from Han, and then again from Maz Kanat. She turns down three invitations in a way. Luke gets one, he's intrigued, and now Ben makes it real, like, come with me. You have to learn the ways of the Force if you're to come with me to Alderaan. So Ben makes it clear, like, it's time for you to start being the more that you want to be. But of course, Luke isn't ready for that amount of change yet, and you know, rejects the call. So again, classic Joseph Campbell hero scene here, but it's such a great scene. So I'm glad you put it in there so that I could talk too.
Good, good. So we're moving on to number three.
We are indeed. Our number three finds us on board the Millennium Falcon, and it's the training of Luke scene on the Falcon. I've always really liked this scene, and it's a great scene because it begins with Obi-Wan feeling all those deaths in the Force. Mm-hmm. Right, so the scene right before it is the destruction of Alderaan, and then we go to Obi-Wan, who is being affected by that. Again, great connection to what Yoda feels during Order 66 and Revenge of the Sith. You know, it shows that the Force really does bind the whole all of existence and all of life together. So when something traumatic like that happens, if you're Force sensitive, you're going to feel it. You know, so Ben really feels that, and he doesn't tell Luke what he feels. He just says, you know, I feel something terrible has happened. That's all he says. He probably doesn't know the specifics until they show up in the ruins, and he immediately gets it.
Right.
But I like this scene because it's the first training sequence for Luke. And what does he have to learn to do? He has to learn to trust his feelings. He has to learn to trust in the Force, which is obviously going to be a constant battle for Luke specifically in his training on Dagobah. And, you know, he's going against this, the seeker droid. And you've got Han the Skeptic there, you know, who doesn't believe in the Force, who finds it silly. And even though Luke just learned about it, he's super gung-ho about it. You know,
he really is.
It's to me like a real world example of that is somebody who converts to a new religion. You know, when you learn something new, you get super into it right off the bat. So you tend to believe everything right away. And that's kind of where Luke is right now. He's just learned about this Force and he's 100% behind it. He trusts Ben. Therefore, he trusts that it's real and it exists. I think that's exactly what's happening for him there. So, you know, even though Han is older and a lot more life experienced, you know, Luke's like, you don't get it. You just don't get it like I do. And and it's interesting that Ben then has him use the blast shield. I don't know if I think it's mostly for Luke, but I wonder if it's partly for Han too. To show to Han, you know, like, this is something real because this is just a farm boy, but watch what he can do. You know, and I really like that because it's Luke literally taking his first step into a larger world. It's something simple and small, but it means so much more. And it's such an important scene because it's going to inform what Luke is able to do later in this film, if not, you know, the rest of the trilogy. But this is Luke's first real felt experience of the Force at work. And I think that's important because if that never happened, if he just wasn't able to do it, he may have just walked away or given up or not believed in it. But, you know, that it's that first initial experience of knowing the Force, and it informs everything he's able to do. You know, specifically the end of the movie, blowing up the Death Star, when Obi-Wan says, you know, trust your feelings, you know, let go. He already has an experience of that working, and this is that experience. So,
yeah,
great scene.
It is a great scene. I like it. I was debating between putting this one and Story Time with Obi-Wan because they're very similar in the type of things that they cover. It's just this one's farther along in the journey. And it is another very important scene in Luke's development because he's actually really finally starting to use this newfound power, use this newfound belief, and put it to the test, so to speak. And I just love the whole sequence. You know, the innocent faith in which Luke approaches this until he's asked to do it without his eyes. You know,
yeah.
And then it's like, but, and Obi-Wan's like, do you trust it? Essentially, you know, not in so many words, but it's essentially asking, do you trust it? And then that's when he rises to the occasion. And it's a great scene.
Yes.
It's a great scene. So
what is
my number three? There's not going to be a lot to talk about. My number three is simply just the throne room.
Okay.
The throne room sequence. I love that there's... the sense of triumph, the happiness in it, the music in it. The setting is rather neat too, and the fact that we get to see R2 and 3PO all polished up and looking nice at the end of the movie, and everybody's smiling and applauding, and it's just like, yes, that's how I feel at the end of this movie. I just love the throne room, so I had to put it on my list.
Nice. Well, I'm going to reserve comment.
Okay.
So shall we go to number two?
Yes.
It's obviously going to give away my number one, but my number two is is the cantina sequence.
There we go.
This is everything from when they walk into Han killing Greedo. I couldn't just pin it down to one particular moment, because I love this entire sequence. You know, they walk in and that great shot of just that alien head popping up, and then, you know, figuring Dan the model nudes. I really want them to play that at like a club sometime. You Dougie to that.
I mean, if we go to some sort of after party at Celebration in Orlando, I'm sure right. They'll play it.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a good point. I absolutely love this sequence. It's fun. Like, it's Luke walking in, right? It's to use Joseph Campbell's terms, it's Luke crossing the threshold. You know, he's entering into something completely new. Luke's obviously heard of Mos Eisley. It's up for debate whether he's been there before. Probably has, at least in some capacity, but he probably has never been into that cantina. Again, Force Awakens, similar to A New Hope, Maz Kanata is kind of supposed to be the cantina scene. The difference between the cantina and Maz Kanata's castle, the people at Maz Kanata's castle are not like... they're not a rowdy bunch.
No.
You know, the cantina is full of criminals who are doing shady criminal dealings. Maz Kanata's a good person. You know, put Maz Kanata against Wurr. You know, who's the better human being?
the one that's not human.
Right. this cantina scene is so cool. We get to see, like you said, Jason, it's such a world-building moment. We get to see that this galaxy is so huge and it has a plethora of life forms. It's really, really fun. And right off the bat, Luke gets into trouble. It's Luke's first step into like a kind of a dangerous world. And what happens? People just want to pick a fight with him. You know, maybe they had a little too much to drink. Who knows? But they pick a fight with Luke because Pondababa doesn't like him, you know?
Yeah, and there's this pretty boy farm boy that walks in and it's like, who does he think he is, sort of thing. And, you know, he sits in the wrong seat and, you know, it ends up running into you and me if you take my my analogy at the beginning of the episode.
Right. Except we wouldn't be so rude.
That is true.
it's a great little scuffle. Like, they just toss Luke like nothing. And again, to me, that just shows how unready Luke is for this sort of moment.
Yeah.
But old Ben just jumps up and literally disarms the situation. You know, Obi-Wan loves cutting off
literally
arms. Yeah. And that's so cool. And then, of course, probably my favorite part in this sequence is meeting Han Solo. You know, we meet this guy who's super cocky, but like, again, like I've always loved Han, and I love that moment because he's just like, you've never heard of the Millennium Falcon. Like, Han just thinks he's such a big deal. And he's just so, should I have?
Should I have?
It's the ship that made the Kessel Run in less than 12 parsecs. She's fast and enough, you old man.
You can almost see Obi-Wan mentally going, woohoo. know?
yeah, absolutely. And it's just so cool, you know. And he gets under Luke's skin so quickly, you know. He tells him the price, and Luke is like offended, you know. 10,000. We can almost buy our own ship for that. But who's going to fly it, kid? You?
you bet I could.
Yeah, exactly.
Dude, settle down, Luke.
Right, right. You've already got
playing your hand here.
Yeah. And I love this. Han is just so cool and calm, and he gets this great deal where he's going to get, you know, basically $17,000 out of this. But then we
learn for an
easy
service.
Transport. Yeah, exactly. He's just being an Uber for the night. Yep. You know, so
pretty good deal.
But what's important too, though, is when they walk away, Han shares something with Chewie, like, this is really going to save our necks. So we know right off the bat that Han is a character who's in some trouble himself. Mm-hmm. And that's then even, you know, brought upon even more by somebody coming at him with a gun, having him sit down, and Greedo, who basically informs him that he's in debt to somebody called Jabba the Hutt, and, you know, there are bounty hunters after Han. Han is a wanted man right now by a crime lord, which is not a good place to be in. But how does Han deal with it? He just coolly sits back, quietly unholsters his gun, and shoots first and ends everything. You know, again, the Blu-ray, you have them basically shooting at the same time. The special edition, Greedo shoots like a second before, and obviously the original, Greedo never shoots. I will always say I like that Han shot first and Han only shot, because it's so important to who's Han's character is at that point of the movie. Han, he'll kill somebody if he has to. He won't think twice about it. And again, that doesn't necessarily make him a horrible person. You know, he's in a kill or be killed situation. So that's not completely amoral.
I will say the only time I've ever seen Han shoot first is in a documentary highlighting the differences.
Yeah. Well, it's not even Han shot first. It's just Han shot.
Well, right. Yeah. And I don't have an issue with the special edition and the Blu-ray and the DVD versions, to be perfectly honest. I don't think it makes that much of a difference in his character, because he's pulling the gun out anyways. He's right. Going to do it.
Yeah.
You know, it just so happens Greedo glanced down and noticed the barrel and, you know, freaked out and got a shot off in the situation. That's it.
Right.
You know.
But
Han's going to do it.
Yeah.
It's the same character in either way you look at it. So I understand people preferring one over the other. Fine, whatever. It doesn't matter to me.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. Well,
you know, and what's you mentioned this when you mentioned the cantina sequence, Jason, but the setting, right? Like I love it's just like it's like this cool setting where everything feels cool and kind of light, but it's a dangerous place. We've seen Luke get jumped and Han kill a guy, like in cold blood. Like, this is a dangerous place, yet I still don't feel uncomfortable about it, right? Like, I still don't feel necessarily afraid in that space. There's just something about that ambiance. I still want, you know, I still want them at some celebration to do the cantina where everybody can sit down and have a drink. I didn't like that they had that at Celebration Anaheim, but, you know, you could only go there if you were, like, part of a special crew. That was annoying to me. Besides the point, because I love those little light globes on the tables. They're so cool. but yeah, you know, this, it's just such a cool sequence, and what a great ending. You know, Han fries Greedo. He's a man in trouble, but he's not going to back down. And then just the way he responds to that, he gets up and just flips a coin to Wer. Sorry about the mess. You know, just leaves the body there and just strolls out all cool and calm, you know. That is why I think people fell in love with Han Solo right off the bat. Even though he kills somebody in basically his first scene, he's just so, like, suave. He's that cool guy. You know, so, yeah, the cantina sequence is my second favorite part of this movie.
I can't say anything else. I mean, it's awesome. So, my number two takes us back to the beginning of the film. And I've already mentioned how much I enjoyed the opening sequence and the battle and everything. But I got to highlight just the R2 and 3PO bickering throughout the whole thing. It's great. Particularly the sequence when they're getting into the escape pod. It's some of my favorite. It's probably my favorite dialogue from the movie, period. You know, don't call me a mindless philosophy, overweight club of grease. Now get out of there before somebody sees you. And they don't reach that level of awesome bickering, you know, very often since. They haven't reached that height of that pinnacle of bickering since. You know, they've bickered on and off, the two of them, throughout these movies. But it's very rare that they get that much. Other than you calling 3PO naked, Phantom Menace. Would you be naked? My paws are showing. You know, R2 keeps doing it. 3PO still needs to work on his comeback sometimes. but I, you know, everybody knows R2 and 3PO are my favorite characters. And a little disappointed they weren't more integral to The Force Awakens. But that being said, We'll move on to that, but from that. But I love the two of them, and this is some of my favorite stuff from A New Hope with them. So I've got to have it, my number two.
Excellent. This is my favorite R2-3PO scene in the entire Star Wars saga, is when they're getting ready to go into that escape pod and, you know, what plants? What are you talking about? Like, I just love how in the dark 3PO is. R2 knows exactly what he's going to do. He knows what's going on. 3PO's completely in the dark. And R2's just, like, just kind of bossing him around, if you think about it. You know, like, this is what we're doing now. And 3PO's just like, I'm not having this. And then when he realizes the imminent danger they're in, you know, I'm going to regret this.
I'm going to regret this.
It's such a funny scene. You're absolutely right. It's my favorite R2-3PO moment. So I'm glad you brought it up, because they really do shine in this film.
They do.
You know, they're together. You know, I mean, R2 is huge in the prequels. 3PO is, you know, he's kind of non-consequential in the prequels, really. His role is significantly smaller than it is in the original trilogy. But, you know, Empire, they're split up for the majority of the movie. Jedi, they have some good moments, but A New Hope is really where those two characters shine. And that moment, that sequence you just mentioned, obviously, is to me one of the best. Well, it is the best to me. So,
yeah, they got some good stuff. You know, R2, this is no time for heroics. Come back. You know.
Yeah. I have decided that we shall stay here.
You're so smart, 3PO.
Right.
You can just see R2 saying that. Anyways. But yeah. All right. Number one. Go ahead and just tell us what we all know.
Well, my number one is the end celebration. And kind of what you said. You know, there's nothing going on here except for celebration. And I think, you know, the music is integral to this scene, obviously, because there's not really any dialogue. There is no dialogue except for Chewie and R2. Again, like you kind of said, Jason, it's so joyful. You know, it's so happy that, you know, the good guys won. You know, if you especially, you know, the way this film is bookended, it's the movie starts with this overpowering Star Destroyer just completely overshadowing this small rebel, you know, ship. But at the end of the day, good triumphs over evil. I mean, that's the overall message of Star Wars anyway. You know, that scene encapsulates it so well. And it's just, it's so good. You know, it's just the heroes being heroes. There's not enough of that in modern film. You know, it's what made Star Wars so fun, probably for young people, but even for adults, you know, is that whole movie. It's a struggle. Like, they're struggling the whole time, you know, from, you know, the main characters to the rebel, you know, this small little rebel fleet of starfighters taking on a Death Star. But at the end of the day, they win because they have the heart and the conviction to do it. And this scene just shows us that. And, you know, when they turn around, Han, Luke, and Chewie, and everybody starts applauding them and the music swells, it just swells your heart. You know, you're just like, this is so great. So that's why it's my favorite moment in A New Hope.
Yeah. It's awesome. I've already said my piece on it, so I won't rehash it. I'm still going to put my number one out here.
Yeah, I'm curious.
My number one, everyone knows I love the trench run at the end of the movie, but I'm not going to just say the end battle scene, because that's like, you know, 12 minutes worth of awesomeness. So I'm going to highlight one specific moment, and it's going to be when Luke finally trusts the Force, you know, during the trench run. He's been hearing Ben on and off ever since he saw Ben cut down, and he's very confused about the whole situation. You know, we run, Luke, run, and then remember the Force will be with you. And he's very confused about this, you know. And then finally, Obi-Wan comes to him, and again, as he's barreling down the trench, he hears Obi-Wan again to say, you know, use your feelings, you know, trust me, you know, that. And Luke finally understands what Ben has been trying to tell him. He turns off his targeting computer and he uses the Force, because we've already seen the targeting computer doesn't exactly work. Right. And so we see him reach out with the Force. You trust his feelings, trust in the Force, and he's able to blow up the Death Star. And it's so great because we've had all this buildup and the music is just going crazy and it's been pounding and intense. And then as soon as we hear Obi-Wan, the music sort of lifts a little bit. It becomes sort of clear. You know, and then he has that moment of clarity, and then it gets into this more determined strain as he continues on and is able to finally blow up the Death Star. And that whole sequence is sort of the culmination of Luke's journey in this movie before he continues on to take his next step in the subsequent films. So I love it. It is my absolute favorite moment in A New Hope.
I'm really glad you brought that in, because people listening would probably have like stopped ever listening to this podcast if we didn't mention something about the end battle in A New Hope. You know, this would be, again, if we were doing a top 10, it'd be in my list. I know that's kind of a cop-out response. I don't know why it's not one of my favorites. It's just not. And the reason I judge these based on when I'm watching this film, especially, you know, anytime you watch a Star Wars film, I'm not always fixated on the entire film. You know, so if I have a Star Wars film on in the background, what are the scenes that I always absolutely have to pay attention to? And these are kind of the scenes that always grab my attention. And that's not to belittle the end battle. It's awesome. It's so cool. And that trench run. And I love the way you put it, Jason. You know, it is. It's the culmination of Luke's journey, you know, being able to finally just stop relying on computers, stop relying on technology, and trusting in the Force. You know, it's such a powerful scene. And again, you know, when Obi-Wan kind of breaks in again, you know, when Luke's raising up in the X-Wing, you know, the Force will be with you. You know, Luke kind of like almost like taps his helmet like, what was that? Am I hearing things? Am I crazy?
Right.
You know, but here it is. It is that moment of clarity. And you picked that apart so awesome, Jason, that the fact that the music does kind of like, it becomes clear. It becomes clear to Luke what he must do now. Mm-hmm. You know, those targeting computers, it's such a precisely small hole that, you know, I mean, Wedge raised that concern during the briefing, you know, will the targeting computer be able to even hit it? You know, like, it's difficult for even a computer to do. It takes something more. It takes something more than technology. It takes a belief in something more. And we see Luke do that. And again, like the scene I mentioned earlier on the Falcon, when he is able to blindly deflect, you know, blaster bolts, that was Luke's first experience of the Force working. But that is something so small, yet he puts everything on the line here because of the words of Obi-Wan. And I think that's what's so important is, you know, you could debate whether or not it's really well showcased that Ben and Luke have a strong, you know, relationship. But it's very clear by the way Luke acts that they do. You know, it's that mentor figure. You know, it's so important. You know, Luke doesn't need to know Ben for long to know that he's somebody that he can trust and that he can rely on. Mm-hmm. And when Obi-Wan speaks to him through the Force at the end of that film, he knows he can. He knows he can still trust and rely on him. So, you know, I think Ben is still his kind of his mediator, if you will, between him and the Force. Because it took Ben to say it for Luke to believe it. But the fact that he trusts Ben also gives him trust in the Force. And it's so cool. That's what wins the day, is trusting in the Force. So I love that. I love that at the end of the day, what allows the victory is belief, the power of belief, mm-hmm. you know, which is what George Lucas was all about when he made these films. You know, he's not trying to make it specifically about a belief in a specific God. He's making it just about the power of belief mm-hmm. In a very skeptical world. You know, and a very cynical world. Mm-hmm. George Lucas is telling us that there is great power in belief. So I love that you ended it with this moment, Jason.
Aw, shucks.
Well, there you have it. There are top five moments from A New Hope. We did ask you, Larians, what some of your favorite moments were, and a lot of you, you know, brought up some great things that we hit on in the show and a lot of things we didn't hit on in the show. Mm-hmm. So if you feel like sharing some more of your own, please feel free to, you know, comment in the comment section when we share the episode. But Jason, before we go, We have a well, actually, before we go, just another reminder, we will be hitting Rogue One coverage sometime, hopefully early next week. I'm out of town this weekend for a wedding, so I'm in a different place every night, so I have nowhere consistent to sit down and do a podcast about this. But, of course, we'll be sharing at least some video stuff on our Facebook wall, and obviously would love to get your guys' responses. But next week we'll have a few days to have obviously digested and think about it some more, and we'll definitely be hitting up our responses to it early next week. So get excited for that Rogue One trailer that drops on Friday the 15th, which is very exciting.
Yes, I cannot wait.
Yeah,
I'm getting really excited about this movie.
I am too. I really hope we get to see Vader in the trailer. I think we will in some way, shape, or form, whether it's just his breathing or him walking by. But
it'll be that last shot of the trailer.
Exactly.
Maybe. Something like that.
Yeah. What if the whole trailer was just Vader? I'm just kidding.
Then we probably see his entire involvement in Rogue One.
Right. Yeah. yeah. Exactly. Because they've already confirmed his part is small but integral.
Yes.
Which is important. He'd steal the show again, just like Luke in Force Awakens. It would have been another Luke story, or Skywalker story. It wouldn't have been the story of Rey, Finn, and Poe.
Exactly. So, all right. But, well, we've got a matchup for you folks, and Carl, you came up with this one, so you want to tell everybody what we got here?
Yeah, we wanted to do something fun from A New Hope, and why not cross it over with something fun like, I don't know, Rebels? So Who would win in a lightsaber battle between old Ben Kenobi and Kanan Jarrus?
Ooh. I like this. I like this. We're getting creative here, sort of.
Sort of.
But yeah, I think this will be an interesting one to see, you know, well, whether people will pick on Obi-Wan's experience and trust in the Force, or if they'll gravitate more towards, you know, Kanan's youth and energy levels, basically. We'll see what people think. So, but if you want to weigh in on this matchup, where can they do that, Carl?
Well, they can do it on Facebook, facebook.com/WampusLairPodcast. Follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/WampusLair. Or shoot us an email at WampusLairPodcast@gmail.com.
Anything else before we wrap up this episode?
All wrapped.
Excellent. Just had to let that breathe for a minute. thank you, everybody, for listening to this episode of the Wampa's Lair Podcast. This has been episode number 190. We're only 10 away from 200. Woohoo! Boring conversation anyway. For Carl, I'm Jason, and we will see you next time here in the Wampa's Lair.